Philadelphia, Union, San Jose, Earth, DC, Los Angeles, Galaxy.
Beach Pass.
Colorado Rapids. Vancouver Whitecaps.
This is my red, white, and blue.
Seattle Sounders.
This is my anthem to you.
Montreal Impact. Chivas USA. New York Red Bulls.
Pitch Pass, your all-access credential to the people that matter in MLS. Here's your host, Greg Roach.
Thanks for listening to the show. Thanks for downloading the show. And also, I'm going to be presumptive here. Thanks for telling all your friends about the show. And thanks for telling them about PitchPass.com, our website. And if you go on iTunes, please rate the show and leave a comment. That'd be great. Best thing you could do for me. The only thing I can ask you to do, actually. We have a fun one lined up, I think. Brian Strauss, he'll be on a little bit later. The sporting news is Brian Strauss. Talk about the U.S. men's national team. They got an upcoming qualifier, huge qualifier versus Costa Rica on March 22nd in Denver. And we'll talk about the goalkeeping situation as well. Speaking of goalkeepers, they put up a big win in their last match versus FC Dallas. They got a Super Classico coming up for their next match. Chivas USA's Dan Kennedy joins us right now on Pitch Pass. Dan, how are you?
Good. How's it going?
It's going really well. Well, I mean, we got sunshine here on East Coast. I know that's not a big thing for you, but for our East Coaster, it's a huge deal.
I could understand that, yeah. It's all right. About 72, 73 degrees here in sunny.
Yeah. Okay, Dan. You don't have to go into the deep forecast for us. Just acknowledge that it's sunny and we can move on.
So what's going on?
Well, let's talk about Saturday, or let's talk about Sunday, because that was a huge deal. Or was it a huge deal for you guys?
Well, I mean, I think obviously it's been some time since we won a game, and but the most important thing is we have a lot of new faces and a lot of new guys to not only our team but to this league. So I knew the first one would come. I just was hoping that it would come sooner rather than later. So, you know, we just get that feeling in the locker room and get the guys that haven't been necessarily around this league some confidence.
Was it a holy crap we won situation with you guys, or was it, hey, you know what, this is what should be happening?
Yeah, I mean, I think we had a terrific preseason together, and the first game didn't end the way that we wanted it to, and I felt like the scoreline was a bit unfair against Columbus. So we came out with a lot to prove, and you know, even with going down a goal in the game, we bounced back and we put three on them. So hopefully that'll get us going on the attacking end too, you know.
Well, that's why I was going to ask you why it wasn't a surprise for you that you got a result against FC Dallas. And before you shift into player speak, you kind of acknowledge it. The game wasn't really going your way through the first half and even up to the 60th minute before you guys turned it around. So why wasn't it a surprise to you that you were able to get a result even after the start?
Well, I mean, I prepare for every game and the mindset that, you know, we're lining up in order to win the game. Going down the goal was, you know, that's an important part of the game in the sense that we could have been discouraged and let it affect us, but instead we responded and we moved forward and we continue to create more opportunities, and we were rewarded in the end with a couple fantastic goals.
Yeah.
from hard work alone. So it was promising for us, and it was a great feeling going into the locker room after the game, you know, knowing that We're not going to, this early in the season, we're not putting ourselves in a position to play catch up. So now we can go into the Clásico, which is a huge match this Sunday, feeling confident.
I'm really glad we're speaking because you guys, the locker room, the team, the organization is probably one of the most talked about teams and clubs in the league, and there's a lot of preconceived notions, and I hate going by preconceived notions, so I'm glad I'm getting to talk to someone within the organization. So I want to ask some questions to you rather than just try to spin it some sort of negative way or whatever. So was this offseason hard for you personally within the organization?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of unknown, but you know what, in my whole career, to be honest with you, I'm not sure I've had one easy off season. I think this is a bit of the nature of pro sports in the game. You know, whenever you don't achieve the playoffs or whatever your club considers success, there's going to be change. So I was fully expecting it, And I wasn't sure if I was going to be part of that change or part of the group moving forward. And fortunately enough for me, I was part of the group moving forward. So I'm just trying to make most of this opportunity.
And I'm sure you're happy at Chivas USA. And with that assumption, how is it when you read Twitter or you go on, you probably don't go on message boards, you read things in blogs and things about all the people being traded away, and then everybody's saying, well, Dan Kennedy's next. Do you have to sit there and think to yourself, hang on, guys, I'm on this team. This is my team. I want to be here.
Right. Yeah, you know, to be honest, I try not to get caught up in that too much. Rumors were circulating in the off season about me being traded, and I don't know how real that was or wasn't. But with that being said, you know, for me as a player, until it happens, you can't really react. You know what I mean? You'll kind of just get caught up in it, and it'll distract you. So when I was going into the off season, anything that I did here, it didn't stop my process of training in the off season or preparing for this season. And, you know, in the end, if I would have wasted all that time, energy and effort worrying about it, you know, really would have gotten me nowhere, because look at where I am now. I'm still here.
Exactly. When you think about the locker room, because Chivas USA has been very public about saying that we're changing our philosophy, our mindset, our mentality of the club. Is it that different in the locker room from last year to this year as far as that mindset is concerned?
Well, I mean, there's definitely been a massive change in player personnel and front and coaching staff and front office. I mean, from top to bottom, there's been drastic change. So it's definitely different. I always say that the most important thing for me is that the guys, whoever is here, is on board, and we're doing this for no other reason than to win, whether it's on the training field or in the ticket sales office or ultimately in the end on the field on match day. Whatever we do, we need to do it to win, and that's really all I care about.
How is your Spanish these days, Dan?
My Spanish is good. It's ironic. My career has been strange in the sense that I left UCSB in 2005 and I was drafted by Chivas. Things didn't quite work out the way I wanted them to, so I ended up in Puerto Rico for two seasons playing in Puerto Rico, which is obviously Spanish-speaking country. And then from there, I went and played in Chile for a year in South America. So I've had a very thorough cultured experience in soccer, and it's all been Latin influenced, and it's done nothing but great things for me. So I'm using it as an opportunity to improve my Spanish more, but I think right now it's pretty good.
So this isn't a situation where you are going through some sort of shock of, oh my God, I can't understand a lot of my teammates. Are you communicating in Spanish on the pitch?
Yeah. The communication part of it's really not a problem for me, and I have no problem even going in and having meetings in Spanish if I need to. And I feel like I can get my point across, and I definitely understand the language well enough to know what's going on.
Well, let me ask you this. Is Chelis speaking Spanish to the team? Is he addressing the team in Spanish?
He does in both. He does his best to address it in Spanish and English, and then we have two other coaches and definitely a handful of players that speak English and Spanish that translate if translating needs to be done. So it's really not that big of an issue, because regardless of I guarantee you every team in this league there's guys on
totally.
The roster that don't speak English as their first language that need translating too, you know.
Did you chuckle at his comments post match, or is that kind of par for the course with him?
Yeah, he is very quotable, I guess, and it's funny because for me, I translate everything so literally that I will not always understand his jokes in Spanish. So I'll need them to be explained to me. But yeah, he's a funny guy, and you can tell that he's charismatic, and it rubs off on the group. He's got a good way about him, and I can understand why he's been successful coaching before.
Okay, so give me your best behind the scenes thing that he said that's been kind of offbeat, and then the best thing that you've lost in translation?
Well, he said, in Spanish, he said, the translation was, when I say frog, you guys jump. And I understood that, and I thought that was pretty damn funny. Because usually it's, you know, in English you would say, when I say jump, you guys say how high.
Yeah.
Right. And then whenever he'll go on about a story and use an example, and I think the example he used was dandruff. You know, he was talking about dandruff. I don't know what we're talking about here, and it was, you know, don't sweat the small stuff.
Oh, and he was saying don't sweat dandruff because it's just, at the end of the day, it's just dandruff.
It's just a little thing, so why let it bother you, you know? And we're not going to sweat the small stuff around here.
Do you walk out of there going, wow, that was very simple, but really, really deep?
And that's honestly, I've been pleasantly surprised many times on how well things are run. But he does a great job of getting everyone on the same page and regardless of the language that is being spoken. And I think that, you know, hopefully this locker room continues to rally around his personality.
I love people like that because when they say things like that, you crack up or you chuckle internally, and then you walk away and don't really think about it. And then, like, maybe driving home, you go, oh, wait a second, that was really, really deep now I'm thinking about.
Yeah, right. And so, like you said, it keeps it light, but it's assertive, too.
So let's talk a little bit about the national team. Tim Howard goes down. The speculation begins of, okay, who's going to step up? Who's going to step in his place? A lot of people in a lot of places were throwing your name around. When you hear something like that, obviously you start thinking about Tim Howard and you want him to be healthy and you start thinking about the national team and you want the team to be successful. But somewhere do you go, not is this an opportunity, but go, oh, things could be changing if I'm ready to step up here.
Well, I feel like I am ready and I would be prepared if given that opportunity. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the U.S. we're stacked with great goalkeepers, and The age plays an interesting role in development, and I'm having my best years right now, and I'm, you know, really in the prime of my career. And with that being said, you know, we have guys like Sean Johnson and Bill Hamid who we're trying as a country to develop to become the next Tim Howard. Obviously, Timmy's in a class of his own, and Brad Guzan's right at his heels just with the form that he's been in Europe. We need both of those guys without a doubt competing for that number one jersey. And that next spot in line is always going to be an interesting choice for the coach in trying to round out the roster and how he sees fit, whether he needs a more experienced guy like Nick Raimondo to help the group along, or is he going to bring someone along that's younger and try to get him that experience so further down the line he feels comfortable, you know? So I, you know, for me, it excites me that my name's thrown in the mix by the pundits, but the reality is I haven't had any contact with anybody from the national team. So I keep focusing on what I can focus on, and that's just my job at hand here at Chivas USA.
What do you think you need to do to have your hand being raised acknowledged?
You know, I'm,
or is that I'm, the million dollar question?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think for me, a big part of my next step in developing as a player is the leadership side of things, and I'm honored to be the captain at Chivas USA, and I think it's an interesting thing for me to captain this club as well with the heritage of Chivas and Chivas Guadalajara, you know, and I'm very proud to represent that. And, you know, I like where I'm at right now in my career, but at the same time, I'm definitely not satisfied on my past. So I'm trying to just improve on every aspect. And hopefully if I can continue to do that, maybe one day I will get the opportunity to to compete for one of those jerseys.
You bring up a really, really good talking point, Dan, and you were respectful to Hamid and Sean Johnson. But with all due respect, they're in the same league you are as far as MLS. They are still developing. I think you kind of consider yourself developed and ready to go and wondering why, okay, my hand's raised. Why is nobody looking over here and calling on me?
Yeah, yeah, of course. I mean, you want, this is what we do. We compete, and I would I want to be on that platform to compete with the best that we have in this country. So the best way for me to prove that is just to go about my business and do it on the weekends when we have our games.
And you're also in an unusual situation as far as American soccer is concerned, in that if you played any other position on the field, you'd probably already have a half dozen caps or so, but because you're in that position, which is the position where Americans churn out great goalkeepers, it's sit and wait, and it's got to be frustrating for you.
I don't get discouraged about it, so I'm not sure frustrating is the right word. If anything, I definitely use it as motivation. I feel like I have a good training process and a good physical training process, and the way I try to go about everything is to prepare myself for improvement. So, I use all those setbacks and whatever it was, even last season, the way last season went, it's all used as motivation to make me better. And that's kind of where my mindset is with it.
Let's talk about the Superclásico, which is happening Sunday at Home Depot Center. And I read an article with some quotes from you in the Los Angeles Times, where you said it's personal. We want to show these guys that, we are on equal footing. Right now, you're still in the little brother syndrome. What does it mean for you guys to beat LA Galaxy, even if it's just a regular season match?
Well, I mean, this game's obviously we share the stadium with them. We know them well. They're coming off back-to-back championships. We have a very new group of guys in the locker room that haven't played in this game before, and it's important that we get everybody to understand what this game means, not only to our organization, but to our fans. And this is a game that's highlighted on our schedule every year, especially to our fans. And I know for me, it's personal because I look at those guys every day maybe not every day, but when we see them in passing, I think about the success they've had the past two seasons and I want to make sure that we're a club that's competing with them at their best. Right now, this is a great moment in their franchise history, and it would be great for us to come in and compete and get some results against them.
You kind of mentioned passing them and seeing them. You're the only two teams in the league that have this situation. How often do you see Galaxy guys either around the city or around the facility?
More so around the facility. LA is so big. We all live in different parts, but around the facility is nearly daily. So we develop relationships, friendships. But if anything, those relationships we develop only make that competition more fierce, because mm-hmm. you don't want to lose to the guy next door. So I know that it always is a battle, and it's one I really relish and look forward to. And I wish they had Landon with them too, and they were, really firing on all cylinders. But looks like McGee and King will be enough to handle for us at the weekend. So
I think you're gonna get some action on Sunday, Dan.
Yeah.
Don't worry about that.
It
sucks. I was trying to make this an all UC Santa Barbara podcast. We had Chris Pontius all set up, but he bailed on us. He canceled till next week. So now you're gonna have to carry the Gaucho flag for the entire podcast this week.
I'll send him a text and give him a hard time for you.
Please do, because I was going to do the whole "you give me a message to give to him," but now it's all disrupted thanks to Pontius.
Well, you can, I can still touch on Chris as a player and a person if you want.
Oh, please touch all you want on him as a person.
Yeah, no, he's a really good guy, really good friend of mine. We actually not only just went to UCSB. Well, actually, we didn't go to UCSB together. He was there after me, but we come from the same town called Yorba Linda in Orange County as well. So our history is very much intertwined, and I'm a big fan of his, and I think he's a great player. And my expectation for him is that he plays a bigger role in this national team set up too going into the World Cup.
Dan Kennedy, Chivas USA, thank you so much for giving us some time and being so candid. I thank you for that.
Anytime, guys. You guys just give us a shout whenever you want to have me on.
You can follow Dan on Twitter at @1, Dan Kennedy. As we turn our attention, no, not to Chris Pontius, canceled on us. Don't think we're going to forget that, CP13. To Brian Strauss. So we'll stay in D.C. He covers U.S. men's national team, MLS, American soccer for thesportingnews.com. You can follow him at Brian Strauss on Twitter. And, well, you know what? Hang on a second. I might actually have a bone to pick with Brian Strauss before we give him the big intro. Brian, are you cheating on me with another podcast?
I am.
Whoa. Jeez, man. First of all, way to drop the first F-bomb ever in Pitch Pass. Nice work there. Secondly, I can't believe you're cheating on me. You are a writer, Brian. You are not a broadcaster. That's my job. That's my profession. That's my niche in this whole thing. Your niche is the writer.
You're right about that.
Well, what's the name of the podcast? Just so we'll give it a quick plug.
I am working with Jimmy Conrad on his resurrected American soccer spectacular. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy and I we just have a thing. I can't explain it. He had me on as a guest one day, and obviously for the same reason you're having me on, everyone else fell through, and he was desperate.
Just Chris Pontius. The one guy, you were the second man on the list.
It just clicked. You know, he's a former defender who wants to be a journalist. I was a lousy striker who became a journalist and wishes I was still playing, and somehow it connects. And he's got a buddy of his named Frank Zaba, who's out in Kansas City, who's sort of like the metaphor here, sort of he steadies the ship for us a little bit when we get too out of control.
He's the host. He's the conductor.
Well, I'm technically a co-host, I think, but I mean, I've been on with you enough times to know that that's ridiculous. I speak when spoken to.
I say good luck to you, but only in the sense that you do not. Your star does not outshine my star. That's all I'm asking.
There is zero chance of that happening.
Well, we just got off the phone with Dan Kennedy, and so I'd like to start with Chivas USA, if you don't mind. When you look at that result, and I don't know if you've seen the match, but just looking at the result, is that a bigger indicator of underrating Chivas, or maybe there's some flaws in FC Dallas that we didn't know about?
I think FC Dallas certainly has a few plays out of that game that they're going to want back. I think Dan Kennedy is a hero and deserves to have an award named after him or something for what the sort of just relentless, you know, firing squad that he faces every week, and does it with such, I mean, I've only interviewed him a couple times, but he just does it with such good humor. He's such a good guy, and I can't imagine what facing that onslaught week after week must feel like. My impression of Chivas is that, you know, that there is a DNA in that club that is just sort of, you know, skin of their teeth. It's just going to be madness and chaos, and they never know what's happening from one minute to the next, and they're making it up as they go. And the way that club has been run since they joined the league in 2005 is the way this team is going to play. They are going to be fun to watch, not only because Chelis is amazing and the greatest quote of all time. I mean, I think he actually used the phrase bucket of feces in a post-game press conference, which also deserves an award. And so you have a team that isn't really disciplined, doesn't really defend, doesn't look like they care to, does have a good instinct to attack, does have some guys like Agudelo who have some talent, and they're going to be fun to watch. Whether or not anyone buys tickets to see them is another thing, but if you're bored and you want to see a 4-3 soccer game, Chivas might be your ticket.
Can you reiterate your thoughts, your opinion on their philosophy of what they want to be?
I will try. I first want to say that I have absolutely no problem with a team choosing to be Latino, forgive me if that's not the proper term, Hispanic, Mexican-American. I mean, I realize that not all Mexican-Americans are Latino, but I'm sorry, not all Latinos are Mexican-Americans.
Thank you.
I should start drawing Venn diagrams before I throw up. I have no problem with that. I love the fact that soccer clubs, both in the U.S. and certainly around the world, have identities, have roots, have some represent, you know, ethnic groups or neighborhoods or political leanings or economic classes or religions. That's awesome. That's part of the fabric of the game. So I want to be clear that I'm completely fine with Chivas reaching out to Latino fans, fielding Latino players, all that kind of stuff. The problem is the name and the logo and the brand. That is the fundamental issue with this team, and it's the reason they've been doomed to fail from the beginning. The issue is that you are immediately shutting the door or slamming the door in the face of a large group of potential fans. You are basically saying, by calling yourself Chivas USA, that you have no interest in appealing to maybe native-born Latinos who feel more pride or connection to their identity as Los Angelinos or Californians than they might then their identity as perhaps, Mexican-Americans or the children of Mexican-Americans. So right off the bat, if you have L.A. pride, California pride, get out, because we're going to wear the coat of arms of Guadalajara on our jersey. You then are naming your team after the New York Yankees of Mexico.
Yeah.
And now we certainly know that the Yankees, lots of people love the Yankees, but lots of people also hate the Yankees. So you are immediately telling the half of the Mexican-American population who gets over the first hurdle that they're not wanted either, because they will never in a trillion years cheer for a team wearing red and white stripes. So in one fell swoop, you've eliminated what? I don't know, do the math. You know, two-thirds, three-quarters of your potential fan base just by what your name is and what your shirt looks like. So for me, I'm cool with the Latino thing. I'm cool with the anti-Galaxy thing. I wrote a big story a couple of years ago about their real and fake marketing scheme that they had. You know, they dressed up a bunch of crash test dummies in Galaxy jerseys and called them fake fans, all that kind of stuff. That's hilarious. That's awesome. If they want to do that, that's great. But they need to rebrand. They need a logo that celebrates both their Latin and their California roots. They need a new name that is inclusive to all Latin fans, to all Mexican-Americans, to people who support whatever team in Mexico or Latin America. And I think when that happens, I think they'll at least have a fighting chance to draw more than a dozen people to that stadium, because it's an embarrassment.
My only non-Chivas USA MLS question I'm going to ask you is, which of the Canadian teams are you buying into long-term for this season?
It's a really good question. I think the East is so wide open. I mean, when I think about playoff predictions, I can see Columbus making it or not making it. I can see Chicago. I can see even DC United making it or not making it. So when you look at a team like Montreal, that and again, whether or not that group of I call them senior citizens, I'm older than most of them, but when I see that group of senior citizens and you know, can they sort of stay fit and healthy and in form over the course of 34 games, I don't know. But that's a well-drilled team, well-organized, with an identity. You know, they're tough to break down. They're good on the counter. I think Patrice Bernier is a rising star in this league. I think he's going to be an all-star. I think he's going to be in contention for a best 11 berth. You've got some guys who can put the ball in the net. I like Montreal, and I like the way that they're looking so far. I'm certainly not a championship contender, but a team that's going to be much better than they were last year. Vancouver, you know, still waiting and seeing. Kobayashi obviously is a pretty dynamic player. Rio Coker looks like he's going to be a good signing. But, you know, the West is tough, so we'll see how that pans out. And Toronto just needs to not be disgraceful. I mean, that's all they need to do this year, is just not be an embarrassment, and it'll be successful.
Okay, so let's go back to Dan Kennedy as we segue into the national team. I asked him, when Tim Howard went down, did he not go, oh, good, but did he think to himself, okay, this is it, it's time to get moving? His response was not surprising, but it was candid in that he seems curious as to why he has not at least been contacted or called for national team stuff, even before the Tim Howard stuff. So why isn't Dan Kennedy getting a phone call from Jurgen Klinsmann?
Well, and clearly when Jurgen took over, he sort of looked at, you know, Brad Guzan wasn't playing at Villa, okay? He looked at Howard as the clear number one, and he said to himself, and I remember him saying this literally, actually, that there's not much behind Howard and that generation beyond Howard. So he was then going to look to the next generation, to the generation that would take over for Howard, you know, after the World Cup. And, of course, he saw Bill Hamid and Sean Johnson, who, shockingly, played like really young goalkeepers, you know, and would have... You know, and look, I mean, we get to see Bill every week, and there are weeks where he's just unbeatable, and there are weeks where he plays like a kid in his early 20s, you know? And so that I think Juergen realized over time that perhaps in certain internationals you want a guy with a little bit more, you know, experience and composure. And so we saw Nick Raimondo get a chance. We saw Tally Hall get a chance. I think the interesting thing is, I'm going to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. So 14 games last year, 14 internationals last year that the U.S. played. Tim Howard started the last 12. Okay? Nick Raimondo started a January friendly against Panama, and Bill started a January friendly against Venezuela. So I think the real question is how did all of this time pass and there is not an obvious fill-in for a goalkeeper in his 30s who got injured? That's, I think, the question we need to ask Juergen Klinsmann, and if I don't do it, I hope someone else does.
But why would there be, Brian? If Tim Howard is going to answer a call-up, he's starting. So if he's healthy, which he has been historically, why wouldn't he be the starter?
Because he's not healthy, because sometimes guys get hurt, because sometimes, you know, crap happens. And I'll say that because I'm now Rita G for the rest of the podcast. I don't know. I mean, look, goalkeeping is, I always get a little reluctant to grade goalkeepers because they broke my bones and I don't like them and I don't, you know much about the position. So I'm careful to say who deserves it or who's not or whatever, because it's not my area of expertise. But clearly, between January of 2012 and now, at some point, there might have been an opportunity to start another goalie to see whether or not there was a reliable fill-in for Tim Howard. That being said, I don't think anyone debates that Brad Guzan has played well at Villa. Perhaps he's the Kennedy of the English Premier League with a sieve in front of him and just trying to hold down the fort. So who backs up Dan Kennedy? Now, that's a great question. I think it seems like Sean Johnson has pulled a little bit ahead of Bill, sort of among the younger goalkeepers. Tally Hall was called into the January camp. Nick Raimondo can still just pull a rabbit out of his hat if he needs to. So your guess is as good as mine who he's going to pick. But why hasn't Kennedy been picked? Why hasn't Matt Pickens been picked? Hell if I know. I'm not a goalie expert, but certainly what Kennedy has done for Chivas over the past 2 or 3 years, I would hope that everyone has immense respect for him. He's amazing.
I actually can't fault Klinsmann for starting Tim Howard when he has Tim Howard available. I don't know what you're going to learn starting a young keeper in a friendly over the course of a cycle. And if it's a qualifier, well, then you're definitely not going to go anything but your tried and true. So I think even if every opportunity there was a friendly, he started someone other than Tim Howard, we'd still be in a situation today going, well, who is the number two? Who is the number two?
Maybe. I can't argue with that, but like I said, I mean, when you look at the friendly in Azteca in August, you look at the three friendlies that preceded the qualifiers in the spring, you know, the Scotland, Brazil, and Canada. You look at the game in Russia. I don't know. Perhaps there was a point at some point last year where you could have put Brad Guzan in there and said, okay, how do you mesh with Jeff Cameron, with Jermaine Jones and Danny Williams, with Fabian Johnson? I mean, you know, the fact that we're having this conversation, the fact that people were wondering if Brad Friedel was going to come out of 2 decades of international retirement and play for the U.S. The fact that people are asking these questions means that there is not a sense of serenity about the goalkeeping situation. And so I'm asking or wondering if over the course of the past year, year and a half, Klinsmann perhaps wasted an opportunity to establish that.
So why, first of all, yes or no, Brad Guzan is the number two and should be starting the next 2 qualifiers. Is that a yes or a no from you?
Absolutely.
Okay. Why is it a definitive yes for you over someone like Nick Raimondo, who, you know, if you call everybody, those would probably be the 2 choices that you would pop up, especially when you're looking ahead to Azteca?
Again, Greg, you're killing me. You know what? Actually, when I took my D license coaching course, the instructor didn't really like me that much because I was kind of a hothead and a jerk. And I was the youngest one. I was in my 20s. I was the youngest one in the class by some distance. And so he forced me to do goalkeeping for the practical portion of my exam, to like construct a training session for a goalkeeper, because he knew I didn't know anything about the position and he wanted to screw me. And I still got like a 96 on my test. So, you know, I had that.
Yeah, you know what, see?
I told you so.
You're going to tell me you don't know what you're talking about, and then you're going to tell me something where I'm going to go, that guy knows what he's talking about.
No, I don't, dude. I don't know. I'm not a goalie expert. Why is Guzan the choice? Because he's a regular starter for a Premier League team, and because when he has played for the U.S., he's done very well. I recall pretty distinctly being at Meadowlands for that U.S.-Brazil friendly right after the World Cup in 2010. He stood on his head. He was fabulous for that game. He is a very, very good goalkeeper, and he has the experience that Johnson and Hamid lack. He has a bit of a big game international pedigree and a bit of a size and athleticism that Nick Raimondo doesn't have right now. He's younger. He's quite a bit younger as well. So to me, he's the obvious choice. The real question comes in, why hasn't he played for the national team in so long? And that's what gets me back to the other issue.
Yeah.
And who backs up him in case something happens? And that, I don't know. I have no clue. I'll plead the fifth.
Okay, so let's talk about the upcoming match, March 22nd. That's Denver at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. We're going to talk about some field players now, Brian. So we're back into your area of expertise. Breathe a sigh of relief as recently Klinsmann at a press conference. Clint Dempsey on schedule to play. Fabian Johnson on schedule to play. The Johnson thing, I could debate with you over whether that's a whew or just a, okay, good, it's going to be good to be there. Clint Dempsey, though, without Clint Dempsey, without Tim Howard, is it just a situation of, oh boy, or is it really just more like, oh boy, who is going to be the leader of this team?
There is no leader of this team right now, and I think that was hammered home when Bocanegra was benched for the Honduras game. That's a sign of a relatively rudderless ship, and I didn't see many people on that field really trying to take control. They were so sort of overwhelmed by the conditions and looked so disorganized. This is a team, and I've written this a couple times, and it's been talked about. 23 different lineups in 23 games. Okay, this is not a team with a ton of chemistry. All right, this is not a team that has developed a lot of comfort playing with each other or trying to execute Klinsmann's tactical system, but we're still not seeing the sort of soccer Klinsmann wants. I'm not even sure if it's possible at this point. And so when you got a guy like Dempsey, who is comfortable in certain spots on the field, he's comfortable with a drawn role, he's comfortable coming out wide, he doesn't want to play with his back to the goal. He says constantly, Google, you know, Dempsey and half turn, you know, and you'll get 10 million hits. Dempsey needs a role. He needs a defined role on this team, just like Michael Bradley does, just like Jozy Altidore does. And I feel like right now they don't have it, and so there's a little bit too much freelancing. There's a little bit too much improvisation. Guys aren't covering. Guys aren't making smart runs off the ball. The passes aren't always working out. So I think right now you still have a team in so much flux and lacking chemistry to such a degree that when you say, you know, let's bring Dempsey over, aren't we glad we have Dempsey? Well, of course, he's a great player. He's a world-class player. But he's not playing at his best with the national team right now because he doesn't have a defined role in a defined system because everything is changing too frequently. So that's my big concern. How come Jozy scores getting out of the bed in the morning in Holland and he hasn't scored a goal here since, like, 2011? How is that possible? How is it the same guy? It's, again, because the system right now isn't being geared toward the talents of the players that we have on the field. So your guess is as good as mine what sort of group's going to show up in Denver. I am done predicting what Klinsmann's going to do. He makes me look stupid every time. So it's a crapshoot. I mean, you know, we'll find out the roster probably Sunday, or if not, then Monday morning. Hearing it could be an MLS-heavy roster, perhaps more than some people expect. I know Chris Pontius is among the players who have been put on the preliminary roster. Nick Raimondo, Eddie Johnson, Brad Evans are on it as well, perhaps Brad Davis, perhaps. So I think we're going to see perhaps a different roster and a different 18 than we saw in Honduras.
Okay, so that kind of leads into the next thing that I was thinking, which is, whilst no one is saying we're looking past Costa Rica because it's at home and it's at altitude to get to Azteca, it does feel like subconsciously media members are kind of going, okay, check. What about Azteca? This isn't a check game, though, especially if what you're saying comes to fruition and it's an MLS heavy roster. This isn't a check game at all.
Costa Rica? No, it's not. No game with this team is that. It doesn't exist anymore. I mean, every game is as difficult as possible. Almost every win is skin of their teeth. I mean, other than the 3-1 win over Guatemala in Kansas City to close out the first round of qualifying, but even that was a Guatemala lead early on, if you remember. So they had to come back from the deficit to win that. All of these games have been difficult because this is still a team searching for an identity. It's still a team searching for chemistry. It's still a team searching for a system. It's still a team searching for a leader, you know? So it's just a bit rudderless right now, and qualifying is really hard as it is. And it's even harder when when the lineup's changing all the time, when the players aren't really sure what tactics are going to work. Or, when you've got German players playing, 90 minutes in a Bundesliga game on a Sunday and then flying to Honduras and playing in that soup 3 days later. I mean, there's just a lot going on with this team right now that is going to make no game a Czech game. And for everyone who sort of, yes, and credit for the win in Italy, credit for the win at Azteca, all of that stuff is great, but there have been a lot of games that have been a lot tougher than they should have been. And so I think that all sort of evens out to present a picture where things just aren't settled right now, and Klinsmann has to make some choices and really do some hard work to get them that way.
When I look at Costa Rica's lineup, especially when you look at their midfielders and their forwards, this isn't one of those situations where you're going, oh, Central American team, let's put them at altitude, let's put them in cold weather, and they're gonna freeze their butts off and not want to play. It's an MLS heavy lineup, especially in their forwards and attackers. And Brian Ruiz isn't going to shirk from a cold weather match, so that's not really much of an advantage. Thinking about a game in Denver in March,
no. And look at the Hondurans that tore apart the U.S. in San Pedro Sula, right? You had Jerry Bankston, you had Oscar Boniek Garcia, you had Mario Martinez, you had MLS guys. So these are, and that to me makes the tactics in the lineup in that game even more puzzling, because you knew these players. I mean, you knew what their skills were, and it's the same with, Saborio, is showing his worth with RSL right now, scoring, the two goals against San Jose and stuff like that. So, these are quality players. And after all the issues and symptoms that I've just outlined that I think are going on with the U.S., if you tack on overconfidence on top of that,
yeah,
screw it. Screw it.
Even a guy like Arrieta, who you would probably dismiss under normal circumstances, he's not going to go to Denver, a place that he's been and played in before, and then look across from him and see Jeff Cameron, who he's played against before, and Omar Gonzalez, who he's played against before, and go, oh boy, we're in an international now. Is he?
No, he won't. But I will say this. The U.S. clearly has struggled, and this could be just a generational thing. I mean, it was an interesting... we had breakfast, a bunch of reporters who were in Honduras for the qualifier. We had breakfast with Sunil Gulati the morning. I can't remember if it was the morning of the game or the morning before. But it was a lot of bacon. So, I mean, that's really the only part that matters. But one of the things that came up was whether or not this generation of American players is coddled, whether or not they've had it too easy compared to, the Harkses and Lawlesses and Ramoses and, Eddie Popes and those guys. They haven't had to work as hard to get respected. They haven't had to sort of fight through to get spots in Europe or in MLA, but they have a league and all that kind of stuff. And Sunil sort of hinted that there might be something to that. And I think one of the things that we've seen is how much trouble this group of players, this generation of players, and the German-born players have had on these fields in Central America and the Caribbean. These fields are rutted. They look like racetracks. The field in San Pedro Sula was really thick. There was a lot of clover on it. The ball didn't bounce right, it didn't move the way you wanted it to when you tried to hit a pass along the floor. So these kinds of environments seem to trouble this team a little bit more than some of the national teams of the past. So the good thing about that is you get them on what will be a lovely field at the Big Dick, and you get them with a 20,000 partisan crowd behind them. And is Arrieta going to be nervous about that game? No, but the U.S. will be more comfortable in that environment, and we may see something resembling the soccer that Jurgen wants to play. Certainly, what we saw in Columbus against Jamaica last September while they barely won, they only won 1-0 thanks to that free kick from Gomez. They dominated possession. They held the ball. They moved it dynamically. That's stuff Klinsmann wants to see, and it's clearly never going to happen in Central America or the Caribbean. It may happen on an MLS field.
And I guess that's another reason, because that's a great point, Brian. But I guess that's another reason why CONCACAF Champions League is so important, because then these guys get that experience with their club teams in a game that has some stakes down there in those Central American pitches.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was kind of what was frustrating about the Honduras game, is that you had guys there who have played in Mexico. You know, you had Gomez. I think Castillo was there. You had Torres. I mean, and, you know, I love the fact that you know, Klinsmann lost Jermaine Jones for playing in the Champions League, but the Champions League ain't Guatemala. You know, that's just a different, you know, kettle of wax or whatever they say. So, you know, he has players at his disposal who have played in CCL, who have played in Liga MX, who have a bit of, you know, just a bit of sense of how the opposition handles these games, what kind of gamesmanship goes into it, what kind of little nuances, you know, again, when you're playing down there, the fields, the crowd, the environment, all that stuff. So I hope Klinsmann realizes, and maybe if this is true, and I can't guarantee it is, but if it is true that there are more MLS players perhaps involved in this round, in these two games, it might be a sign that Klinsmann is realizing that these are guys that have experience with these kinds of settings and in these kinds of environments, and maybe I would want to, you know, work with that. Clearly, the team that took the field in San Pedro Sula with a brand new back four that had no experience playing together, with guys like Jermaine Jones and Danny Williams, who just are still kind of coming around on what CONCACAF is all about, that was not a team built to win that game. So hopefully Klinsmann has learned his lesson.
So let me put you in a worst case scenario situation, and then I'm going to let you go.
That's not very nice. We should end on a positive note.
Hopefully you're going to spin it as a positive.
Okay.
So the 22nd of March, it's a point. Azteca, it's 0 points. Three matches in, 1 point. Are you panic switching right now, or are you still in a situation of long slog? Toughest part of the schedule was I don't, and it's not, but tough part of the schedule. The away to Azteca is in your rearview mirror. Moving forward, this should still be a situation where the U.S. can qualify for the World Cup.
Yeah, they can still qualify. I mean, don't forget, you got to finish third, not first. But I think here's what I would hope happens. I would hope that Sunil and Jurgen and the leaders on this team, the real leaders, Bocanegra, Howard, Michael Bradley, Clint Dempsey, you know, the household names, not the young guys, not the Germans, that they sit down and really talk through what this team is about, what kind of soccer they're going to play, what kind of communication has taken place between the coaching staff and the players. I think perhaps hiring another assistant would help Jurgen. I think he's got too many of his guys in there. You know, you need a, you know, he's worked with Martin Vasquez too long. He's got, you know, Chris Woods and, oh, the Austrian, whose name is on the tip of my tongue right now, but it's escaping me. There is not a guy there who really, really has a sense of what the MLS player, the American player, goes through on a daily basis. So perhaps that's something to consider. You can't fire Klinsmann. He's on the hook for $2.5 million. And, you know, if you fire him, everything goes to hell, and I don't know who you're going to get, you know, try to raise the Titanic at that point. So you kind of made your bed with Jurgen. If your worst case scenario happens, I think it's salvageable, but I think you're going to have to take some steps. And I think a real clear the air meeting, and I think perhaps another voice to sort of add some new ideas, perhaps say no to Klinsmann now and then, I think would help as well. So that's what I would do.
So you're saying if it's 1 point after three matches, but you see a more cohesive unit, a clear leader or a vocal leader, either on the pitch or in the locker room, at that point you go, okay, not good, obviously, but this is something that can still easily be done. If you don't see that and you still see 1 point, then you might be apt to hit that panic switch.
No, I don't know that I would see it in those games. I guess what I'm saying is, if these two games don't go the way I understood your worst case hypothetical, which didn't involve like aliens or a meteor or like a horrible disease or anything like that, which is a load off. I think if you have my girlfriend just walked in and she's distracting me.
Is she closed?
Yes.
Okay.
We promised we were keeping this G-rated. Now it's you. Why are you doing this to me? So I think you may not see it in these two games if they go badly. I think if they do go badly, it is then, at that point, you have until June, right? The next qualifiers aren't until June when you have three games. So in that interim, there must be a come-to-Jesus kind of thing,
okay,
where everyone sits down and says, here's the kind of soccer we're going to play, here's how we're going to communicate it. The players need to say, you know what, we don't really feel like waking up at 7 in the morning and doing empty stomach runs and then doing two training sessions a day and then spending time on a bike and then doing yoga. You know, I mean, maybe there's that kind of conversation where there can be some give and take and trying to figure out what this team needs to do to get through the hex. And then, like I said, maybe it's not a bad idea to go out and if it's Jesse Marsh, if it's Tab Ramos, if it's somebody like that who can come in and be another voice, be an advocate for the player, the American player, something like that, that can come in and sort of, you know, just maybe reshape things a little bit. That's what I would do if I was in charge.
So he's a writer for SportingNews.com. He's a podcaster for the American Soccer Spectacular. He's a broadcaster, and he's a lover of his girlfriend. Even after all these years, she still takes his breath away. He is Brian Strauss. Thank you, my friend.
Good.
We appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you.
My pleasure. Sorry for the rocky start, man.
No worry. It was rocky. Right. Just because you drop an F-bomb doesn't make it rocky. It makes it rock and roll is what it makes it.
I'll take it.
Show information, go to pitchpass.com.